You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
The gout usually takes place in the big toe, Greg.
Yeah, I thought I knew it was foot related, but my great toenails fight off gout. Gout can't get in because I've got like two shields, armor. Get out of here, gout. I ain't getting past those toenails, I'll tell you that.
I'm going to hide in your big toenail if I need to.
You could do that.
Thank you.
Mike saw them at golf. They're as long as they've ever been.
Am I supposed to cut it today?
That is trash talk. That is trash talk right there from Greg Cody. If you don't know what they were talking about, we've got a grid of death punishment being paid today, and it's an unpleasant one. Greg Cody's big toenail. It's been cut around here before. It's unpleasant. It's a thing that Stu Gatz continues to pick as a punishment. And go ahead and describe the state of the nail that was revealed to all while you guys were playing golf. And the audience is dying to know about this majestic golf shot of yours that Stu Gatz has claimed is the best golf shot he's ever seen in the history of a stick hitting ball.
I had to apologize to Mike Ryan this morning because until Greg hit that shot on Friday, and we'll get to it in a second. We'll get to your toenail in a second. Mike Ryan had the best golf shot I have ever seen. He has been replaced by you, just so you know. You bounced out Tom Watson 82 out of the sand, U.S. Open.
Wow.
Yes, he is no longer in my top five.
Somebody said that wasn't out of the sand. I don't remember. It was so long ago that you've got it wrong, that your list, that you don't actually have this correct.
It was a chip out of the sand, either 82 U.S. Open or 82 British Open. I will look it up right now.
Okay, but are you sure it's the sand? Because because you're a historian on these things, but yeah. Greg, tell me about your shot. Mike Ryan, do you have any embellishments to ask? Do you agree with Stu Gatz that this shot of Greg Cody's was amazing because of the stakes, because of everything else?
It's certainly the greatest shot I've ever seen in person. And quite possibly the shot he had before that was one of the worst I've ever seen in person.
Right.
But it just kept going and going, and he was actually quite good on Friday, getting himself out of trouble. But this shot, this is the first time I've ever played with Greg. In my mind, Greg is an excellent golfer. just because of this shot that I saw. It stays with you.
Well, tell me about it. Please, you're dying to do so. We'll get you. This is what you do. You got to throw Mike Evans the ball early in the game. Yes. Okay? You got to give him something.
All right. I stand corrected. It was out of the very deep rough 82 U.S. Open in between, sandwiched in between two sand traps. Wow. My apologies.
So memorable in your top five.
Makes it even better. It was the best shot of my life. I mean, I've been playing golf for 40 years and longer, and it was the best shot of my life. It was about 130 yards, which is like a short par three. I've played hundreds of par threes, never gotten a hole in one, so this was totally unexpected. It wasn't a gorgeous shot because I probably used, knowing I don't hit long, I probably used an 8-iron or even a soft 7, meaning to loft it. And I didn't. It was more of a line drive. I mishit it.
I asked you what club you were using because we were playing. It was like a best ball format.
Right.
So I had to hit the same shot. I asked you what club. You said you had an 8-iron in your hand.
Okay.
But you were also hammered. I mean.
Well.
This is. They said you were 4 Bloody Marys in. Right. Not surprising at all.
Yeah. It ran up a hill because the putting green was elevated some.
Right.
So I have no idea how we did it. It just kept going.
Did you see it roll in? Could you tell from where you were that it had gone in the hole?
No, it was so far away. The first evidence I had was Christopher raising his arms.
Let me paint the picture. Christopher is on the green, and he's putting for birdie. So Chris has stuck it really, really close. So he is sitting there, and he is watching the shot. The only indication we had that this shot had a chance of going in was Chris's reaction to the shot. The shot never left the ground, Dan, okay? An 8-iron's supposed to go very high in the air.
Yes.
You're supposed to bounce it 5 feet from the cup.
Yes.
And then you hope it finds its way into the hole or close to the
bounces
hole.
In. This was a rocket ship. He just a line drive.
It was like 150-yard bump and run.
Yeah, it was the best worst shot in the history of golf.
So it's just a clothesline right into the hole. You don't know if your son, perhaps, as you're coughing all over the course and he roots for his father, made the whole thing up. But you guys can't see him. You just saw his arms come up celebrating it.
Now, I could see Greg couldn't. Again, he was 3 Bloody Marys in. He had the fourth in hand.
So guys kept telling Greg to aim for the hole in the center.
Yeah.
Just aim for the middle one, Greg.
So I could see the ball. I saw it rolling up to the green. I saw Chris starting to celebrate or at least get nervous because Chris did not want it to go in. If it went in, it halves the hole. And then I saw the ball disappear. Greg did not see that. So once the ball disappeared, I knew it went in the hole. I still can't believe it until this day because it curved, Mike, around the little
until
sand trap.
Day,
three days.
I still can't believe it, though.
It was just a few days ago,
it's
though.
It's unbelievable.
That is not how you use until this day.
You are totally right. Okay.
Right. Stugatz, I think you, my teammate that day, I think you told me, don't even take the shot. Why bother?
I did. I told, and you said I got it.
Right? What a great feeling. The highlight. What a great feeling that Mike Ryan goes out there and Greg Cody, wearing the same shirt he wears every time I see him in a golf video. It's his golf shirt. The neon green golf shirt is out there on the golf course on the prowl between coughs. And from what you guys said yesterday, it was a key moment. It wasn't just that he made the shot. He made a shot at a necessary time to swing the result. Is it your greatest athletic achievement?
Other than my 50-yard field goal, obviously. But in this case, what I absolutely love about golf is that I am a guy in his 60s who shoots in his 90s. And for one glorious moment, I hit a golf shot that the best players whoever played the game would be absolutely thrilled with.
But the best players to ever play the game would have put that thing 100 yards in the air. It would have landed 2 feet from the hole. You grounded it up there.
I know, but don't ruin my buzz. It still went in the hole. Cody in the flesh. I want a song about this golf shot.
Sounds
I'll tell you
like that. He's 80 years old. I know he's not proud of how he dresses. In an 80s shirt and a 70s haircut. And on the show he's like, knuckleball, curveball, I can hit a home run. Kershaw, Verlander, don't matter who is throwing, I don't care. I'll hit them 400 feet in air. And then Greg Cody's like, I can take D. Wade and Bosch on the double team. Find the open man now. regarding me, I don't care. I'm draining threes from everywhere, and I can kick field goals. Like my idol Fod Ruiz, I'll hit from 50 yards at least. Even though I'm missing PATs, I'm good enough to place wagers. And win the money from Labatard, and then I'll...
Now, I do have an update on Mike Ryan, because until Greg hit that shot, Mike Ryan had the single greatest golf shot I have ever seen. 2019, Devil's Isle, the 11th hole, Parkland Golf and Country Club. Mike hit the same club.
How far was it from the hole?
120 yards.
No, but how far?
Oh, 4 inches.
You forgot, you forgot how you tell this story. Okay.
Stuck it 4 inches from the hole with a driver. Now, to Mike's credit, I know he's disappointed that he has the second greatest shot in golf history. Mike got a lot better. Mike has gotten a lot better since the last time I played with him. He took out the driver again on Devil's Isle 11, Parkland Golf and Country Club, 120 yards out. He took out the driver and he drove it in the drink. I mean, he sailed it over, Dan. He hit a driver the way you're supposed to hit a driver.
It just dawned on me that right back in 20. Yeah, it dawns on me that in 2019.
You'll take it, though, right?
I was thrilled for him.
To hit it with a driver on that hole.
When you are a novice, though, golfer, I'm going to say this, because I was wondering when Stugatz was saying it, would every golfer, not amateur guy, but would every golfer playing take the shot that he had, even if it wasn't like a beautiful shot and it was just clearly a screaming mistake? Like it's not any dexterity, like it's nothing but luck, because you're hitting a ball at 1,000 miles an hour, as it relates to what it is that you're saying there.
You could hit.
I think a young golfer will be happy to hit a driver right over the green 100 yards just because you hit the ball clean.
Oh, hitting it flush was awesome. Yes, I was more pumped about sailing it because I hit a drive for 200 yards more than I was that one time that I pinned it, just because I was hitting it as hard as I could back then. So I feel better about it. But Greg hit a shot, and golf's a very frustrating game, obviously, but it's all about hitting three shots that keep you coming back.
Mike, your drive on the 11th hole, do you know which hole it landed on? Like, it went in the water. Do you know what hole it was? It was the 14th hole.
It's like Bryson.
Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Are you the golfer who's totally okay sending a drive 200 yards past the hole because you hit a 400-foot bomb?
I was mad that the water hazard was there. That shit would have kept rolling, Dan.
But, Dan, you can only do it on a par 3, and Mike's the only one I've ever seen use driver on a par 3.
But I'm arguing, Mike is arguing on behalf of golf, that they're the three shots that keep you coming back. But I think early on, it doesn't even have to be three. It's just the one flush one.
I just want to make contact.
Yeah.
I was feeling very confident because I didn't swing over a drive that entire 18. Now, mid-range, different story.
Now, Mike played very well. To answer that question, though, any golfer would take the shot that Greg hit.
Yeah,
true. It was like he broke hearts, Dan. The hole was over, and he pulled out a half a point for us.
I was asking you more, is there a golfer throughout history that has sort of the style or loves the aesthetic so much?
None of the good golfers would take that shot.
Would be snobby about, like, I don't want that way. That's not correctly played.
No, they would laugh at their luck, and they would, in the post-match press conference, they would talk about how ridiculous it was that it went in.
But I think your son would be embarrassed by hitting that shot, because your son is the best golfer by far. Of the four of us, he is really good.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't even that fun playing with him because we're doing best ball. I'm like, I'm making two contributions here.
Christopher's a great golfer. He's practically on his game. He's almost a scratch golfer. He drives the ball 280 yards. He has never holed one for more than like 30 yards, he said.
At some point, we are going to be able to put together for the audience some athletic competitions around here that can be wagered on through DraftKings. And one of the things that I'm always marveling at is the critics, us, the people with the microphones, how many different ways we underestimate how difficult some of the things we're watching are. And I thought about this yesterday as I saw Adam Schefter trying to field punts before the game yesterday. We would have so much trouble between us if we took the whole show out and had, I'd like to do this at some point with the Dolphins. take the whole show out and see if any one of us can catch a single punt. A single one, right, in midair where his effort is to get us to not be able to catch it, right? So angle it and do everything else, not just stand under one and have it be kicked to you, but have to go to the place where the ball is and wait for it and catch it correctly as it falls out of the cloud.
And just make a fair catch?
I think that we'd have uproariously funny things happen and somebody would get hit in the head.
I don't think fair catch. I think we should have the full special teams unit on and they have to make a tackle.
Yeah. Well, no, there are liability issues with that. I think that's a terrible, just for you especially, a really terrible
what
idea.
What is that supposed to mean?
We're going to get the Dolphins special teams to tackle your brittle bones?
In Smitty's defense, though, I do like the idea. You fair catch it, but you have to have the special teams unit coming down, like hovering. Yes, you have to have them coming down.
You weigh less than anyone. You weigh less than
brittle
anyone
bones,
in here.
Dan. How do you know anything about my bones?
Right, that's an assumption.
You weigh less than anyone here, and you being tackled in an NFL football game, I thought you knew wouldn't go well. Or are you someone who thinks, like everyone else in this shipping container, that you're a better athlete than you
me
actually
are? Me and Hunter
are.
Renfro, 1v1, open field.
Well, let's talk about this guy, because when he took his helmet off yesterday, I was confused. Because that dude's good.
Yes.
And obviously smart. He had like the smart play of the game. If you did not see it, he's a punt returner, and the Chargers had a perfectly executed fake punt with a lobbed ball to the gunner who didn't have anyone near him. And this dude flies out of his, I was wondering who hit him like that. I thought it was the gunner from the camera angle I had never seen before a punt returner come and break up a great pass 10 yards downfield with a hit, and then he took off his helmet. And his hair does not work for an excellent athlete. It was confusing to me. It looked like because he's just a couple, he's not that old, but he's got the hair of a 43-year-old, a 40, like Scott Skiles.
Right.
Well, really? You nailed it with Scott Skiles.
Yeah.
That was excellent.
Yeah,
it feels like we've seen Hunter Renfro play sports for 10 years because he played all 4 years at Clemson. Yeah. And you never really see someone in that program stay all 4 years contributing to the team in the way that he did.
The Raiders call it third and Renfro.
I just Googled his age. I'm shocked he's that young.
Scott Skiles was outstanding.
Well, but let's talk about this. Because if the audience didn't see this, when he took off his helmet, that did not look like an elite athlete who had just made that play in that game. Right. A play we've never seen in a really fast and dangerous game. He's very small, first of all, but then you add, like, the small guys in that league have an attitude, and none of them have that hair.
What's the attitude you're talking about? My dad's going to sue you? Because I feel like Hunter's got that energy.
The attitude is, I just got assigned to dorm with this guy in freshman year of college. Yeah. Like, he just walked in and it's like, oh, here's your roommate. We're freshmen. Yeah. Nice to meet you. Let's go to Bilo.
How much does Gruden love that guy? I mean, Hunter Renfro.
Yeah, great name. I mean, it's a world-class name.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Do you love how Gruden walks? Because I do. Because he's got the old man confidence of, now my gut goes up here. And my butt is...
What are you going to do about
my
it?
My butt is in and I'm just going to walk. I'm going to walk with my entire gut filled with success. Like with my ass tucked under it so that it's just, I don't care about this anymore. I live in Vegas. I'm making $10 million a year. My owner looks like a scarecrow who got too much radiation past a power plant. And I run this place. And look, and Derek Carr, and look at this guy who's going to run past your secondary, Ruggs. I get jealous there. Whittingham, do you get jealous there too because of Dolphin offense for 20 years?
Oh, yeah. Ruggs is good.
No, just a guy running down the field that somebody can throw a 50-yard pass to that will run under it.
Dan, we've sent Chris Whittingham out on assignment, all right? He got into the industry for one reason and one reason only, to walk to the CVS across the street and get industrial-sized nail clippers so Stu Gatz can cut the gray toenail.
Okay.
Are we going to do that next?
That's going to happen today.
Oh.
All right. Chris Whittingham comes back, because just someone like Chris Whittingham walking around South Beach, it's not a given.
We did not talk enough yesterday about the son of Bill Belichick. We failed. We failed yesterday. We talked about that game from so many angles. Have there been ratings yet on that Patriots?
Yeah, second biggest SNF game since 2006.
That's big. We knew it would be, right? I mean, I'm surprised it's not the greatest ever.
Yeah, same here. What is the greatest ever, did they?
I didn't read that in the tweet, but I imagine it was Colts-Patriots.
No, the greatest ever was a Week 17 Washington versus Cowboys game for the NFC East title.
Look at you.
Makes sense.
Expertise from Greg Cody.
Yeah.
Wow.
I wasn't there, but in spirit I was.
The son of Belichick. Give me everything you guys have. Was he making signals with his tongue? Was the defense... Was he giving signals to his team with his tongue, or did he just have a strange tick of some sort that when he gets aggressive, he sticks his tongue out a lot?
I wondered about that. It can't be a signal because the tongue is too small to be seen on the field. I have to think it was a tick.
He single-handedly brought the mullet back because he's been married to that hairstyle for 3 years, and now it's kind of coming back, and he's there, stalwart of the mullet.
Everyone, including the pastor of that team, graduates to great jobs. The pastor of that team is now running the Texans because they ran out of all the Charlie Weisses and Bill O'Briens and any guy standing next to the guy.
Is that a great job? I mean, I guess if you're a pastor and you're running a football team.
I'm just saying that the one guy who's not going to be able to parlay it into anything is his son because he chews on his tongue or because he does those things with his tongue. And that's no one will make that a head coach.
But Belichick picked his teeth with a pencil, a lead pencil. That was weird, too.
But Belichick is a freak genius. And his son is just giving off on the sidelines. Just freak. I can't entrust my football team to you, even though you're Belichick's son.
I haven't seen more extreme facial tics since Adam Gase's introductory Jets press conference. I mean, it was bizarre. And the camera only showed it for like 3 or 4 seconds. And when they left him, I was thinking to myself, no, stay on him, please. I want to see more of this because it was truly bizarre. It was great. Fantastic. One of the highlights of the game.
When I was a little kid, I remember Don Shula's son coaching the Cincinnati Bengals. And Dave Shula, and he got out of the league real quick. In fact, if you go through his Wikipedia page, they really have any credentials outside of being Don Shula's son.
Mike, this is great that you would say this because this is the one place in America, and I dare say the world, where we have with us today the man who has written more crappy columns about the entire Shula coaching tree than anyone on earth. Greg Cody loves to call up a David Shula and fill his columns with uninteresting David Shula quotes. He's been doing it across decades, and he is the foremost. I'm so glad you asked, Mike.
I am too.
We have the foremost authority on Don Shula's sons couldn't coach a lick right here with us today.
If I can correct Levitard's vile hyperbole, I have written one, that's parentheses one, O-N-E column on Dave Shula. I wrote it.
Greg, you quoted David Shula this week in a column.
Right.
You quoted David Shula in a column.
He was at his father's celebration
week,
of life.
You've written more. I only know David Shula through your writing. You've written years and years of columns about whether he should be the offensive coordinator here, whether he should be with the Bengals there. No. It is true.
I have written one column on Dave Shula, and it was when he, after 20 years out of coaching, became the wide receivers coach at Dartmouth, where he continues to be. He reinvented himself after 20 years. I thought it was a good column, and it was, and it is. And I quoted him a couple of days ago because he's the eldest son of Don Shula. He was at the celebration of life at the stadium for Shula, which I covered, because unlike yourself, I'm a working journalist who actually gets out and covers things. And Dave Shula, I quoted him. That's all. It wasn't entirely about him. I think there were two or three paragraphs in a long column about the celebration of life that mentioned Dave Shula.
I read about Don Shula's death, and it was a sad column and a good column because Don Shula was not buried properly in this town during the pandemic.
Right.
He died, and he deserved, because of where we were as a city, a man who has an expressway named after him, a coaching titan, the bigger than Pat Riley, the seminal sports figure in this town, representing this town with integrity and grace and all that stuff, as you see Urban Meyer go through what Urban Meyer goes through. He was not buried properly, and thousands of fans came out to honor him. That was an old piece of Miami that made an appearance there to celebrate an old coach, because history is cruel and time is cruel and people forget. But you wrote more bad columns about his son. I was not saying that this was a bad column. Right. When I saw you quoting David Shula, I remembered, I'm not kidding you, all the times I've read your columns and thought to myself, David Shula's not a good quote.
No, he isn't. I don't know
why Greg Cody keeps quoting him. He's not interesting.
Everything I write is a matter of record that you can Google and look up. And I challenge you or listeners to find things on. I don't mean a fleeting reference to Dave Shula. I mean
you've written more about Mike Shula, Stugatz. The Shula family. Saban took Alabama from Mike Shula. Shula was this close, and then it was Saban. The Shulas got very good jobs because of the name Shula.
It's Greg's go-to guy, though. I mean, clearly it's one of his go-to guys. But why would you keep going to him if he's not a good quote?
He's very defensive about you saying that
it's
about
him. It's so weird. He's protective.
Certainly not what I intended by invoking his name. I think we should move on.
I want to keep talking about this because I'm so annoyed by Levitard, you know, taking pot shots up here. And if they're warranted pot shots, that's one thing. In this case, I wrote a column when Dave Shula, after 20 years out of coaching, got back in coaching. I thought that was a very legitimate column, and it was. And I invite people to go back and look at it. I think it was like five years ago.
You're right. I laid down my sword. I don't know why it is that this became the one place that you're a dog with the bone with this, and you're wrong. Like,
I'm not wrong.
You're okay. That's fine.
That's not laying your sword down.
I apologize. David Shula's a great quote.
I've read many
things about David Shula and his family over the years, and somebody else was writing them, not my good friend Greg Cody.
Greg's admitting is not a great quote, but in terms of who remembers your columns more, I'm going with Dan.
I'm laying down. Okay. Greg is right. It's a weird. I'm stunned that he's this defensive about it. I thought he was going to roll with the bit. He needs to protect the Shula family, the Shula name, and weirdly David Shula.
Dave Shula was never a Greg Cody source. Okay, I think that's what you're protecting. A potential source 35 years later.
The only story is broken is my engagement. Why would David Shula be a source on that? He doesn't break news.
You challenged me to list stories I've broken over the years, and I gave you a top 10 list, which I believe aired on your show a few years ago. No, in this case, I'm very sensitive to, not to criticism, but to unwarranted criticism. So when you make it seem like I'm constantly writing about Dave Shula, it's either a bizarre lie or a simple untruth. It's ridiculous.
We'll see. We're going to go to the internet now. We got a team of researchers. You have now, I laid down my sword, and now you continue to come after me, and I don't think I'm wrong about this.
Well, I'm not coming after you. You're coming after me, as you did on the air yesterday when you referred to me as useless for some reason. I have no idea. It's a terrible thing to refer to another human being as useless. In an era where we all have heightened sensibility to mental health issues and to bullying, for you to go on the air and call somebody, let alone a friend of yours, useless, is just absolutely ridiculous. I'm glad I'm going to be at that roast of you Saturday, because I'm going to stand up and start heckling you. Okay, if they're not roasting you hard enough, I'm going to stand up at the table after a couple of scotches and start roasting your ass, because you deserve it, asshole.
Yeah!
The Dan Lepetard Show with Stugatz is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's time for a self-check-in. How's your social battery right now? Is it drained or bursting with energy? Similar to how a battery stores energy before eventually running out, individuals with a social battery may feel a need to recharge or withdraw from social situations after a certain amount of time. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with work or social gatherings. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLB today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLB.
Hey, listening audience, it's Mike Ryan, and you're a sports fan if you're listening to this show. Well, that's up for debate. You may not know this, but Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch, with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, that's key, and their low-price guarantee. Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. I was actually in Baltimore last season, always wanted to check out that ballpark, and I actually went to the Game Time app to actually see exactly what I was dealing with, and on top of that, I got a killer deal. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Told you that was
all over Dave Shore.
You should have laid down your sword.
Yeah,
jeez,
warned you. You make me smile, Greg. That's useful.
Well, Billy, from what I was told, I didn't hear it live. From what I was told, you were the only one who defended me against that yesterday.
All right, now
others in the room who'll go nameless.
You had a Dave
jumped
Shula
on the bandwagon
yesterday.
No, this is him objecting to being called a useless person.
Oh, imagine that.
Which I explained.
It did feel lazy.
I explained on air, and this part may not have gotten back to Greg Cody, that I was going to call him a bum, a hobo, or a homeless man, and I didn't think any of those phrases could they weren't good anymore. They've expired, so they're expired phrases. I looked at all three of them in my head, and they were way past date somehow. I wasn't paying attention. Like those things that I dressed as a hobo when I was a kid. Right. I was just wearing my dad's clothes. That's all it was. I did it for 10 years. I called myself a hobo. Words not allowed anymore.
Right. Well,
it's not even homeless. Isn't it's unhoused is okay. Now the word. And so because I was doing that, and I thought to myself, well, if I say he's an unhoused person, like that joke's not going to land.
Right.
And
plus, so I got unhoused is an awful word.
I got caught up in the air. And so I just simply stumbled over the line and called you instead of a hobo, a bum, or a homeless person.
Okay.
A useless person.
Yeah. The coincidence is I actually was a hobo for a couple of years before anybody knew my name. I rode the rails in the Southwest. But useless really hurt because nobody should be called useless. No human being should be called useless. Greg's hobos. Who won, by the way, yesterday.
He's back.
He's not back. That's not a thing we're doing anymore.
Greg's hobos. It was fantastic. Talk about Mike Williams of the Chargers laying an egg last night. Thank you, Mike Williams, because I beat Dick's Rough Riders because Mike Williams had exactly 2 points in that game. Thank you, Mike. I'm going to send him a little Lobos mint. That's what I'm going to do.
Put it right under his.
Damn right. Thank you, Mike Williams. It'll arrive at camp tomorrow.
Look at what cheers him up, okay? He goes from unhinged, unrailing, calling me names, look, to getting to talk about his fantasy team.
That's
for
right.
Look at him, and look how delighted it is. Look at the mood altered it. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. If you are depressed, does talking about your fantasy team lift depression and make your mental health more sound?
This seems like a great time, Greg, to do our contractually obligated clip honoring the Greg Cody Show.
Shit.
Nice.
Featuring, it's with Greg Cody.
This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is behind the curtain. This is producing by Mike Ryan. Yeah. Tickle him with his narcissism, things about himself.
This is not a dig. Correct me if I'm wrong. You have Dave Shula on this week's episode, don't you?
No. We've done 80 episodes. We've had Dave Shula on once to talk about his dad dying. Is that okay?
Mention that a second ago when I put my sword down. You mentioned that that didn't exist, that it was only a column about David Shula.
Well, either way, Greg, here is this clip. Would you like to set it up?
I don't know which one was sent to you or which one you picked.
Gentlemen, we're going into this next game off 2 big wins in a row. And I know the psychology of sports better than anybody. And I'm going to tell you, we're poised right now, if we're not careful, to go into this game with a big head. But listen, so we don't go into this game with a big head, I brought in a special guest today. It's Dexter Dinwiddie, who you may all know as the Guinness World Record holder for the smallest head. Now, here's Dexter.
Guys, I've gone through life never having to worry about having a big head. And you know what? Even though some people might make fun of me, I think it's the way to go. Because I never have to worry about overconfidence, not taking anything for granted. And you guys are in that position right now, okay? I know you got helmets to hide it, but I want you to trot onto that field imagining that that helmet is rattling around on top of a small head like mine. Okay, guys? I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. I got all the faith in the world for you. Go get them today with small heads.
I want three in a row.
How'd you get Dexter?
I want.
Well, we, you know, put out a couple of feelers a couple of weeks ago. He finally got back to us.
I want the audience to recognize the art in he held out $50, negotiated, wants promotion for his show, and you would have been more likely to listen if we had not played that.
Strong disagree here.
If we played Dave thank Shula.
You. Thank
I just,
you.
I just subscribed again.
Thank you.
Incredible thank stuff. You. I have my suspicions that Dexter was you. With a voice modulator?
Mike, when you played that, I looked around the room and all of you were cringing. You all had your head in your hands. You were wincing. And as an added bonus, way too long. And I look over at Greg Cody, and he's beaming, radiant, minutes after calling me.
Man enjoys his work.
After calling me an asshole, minutes right. after, like, he could not have been happier about his small head joke.
Right.
The Greg Cody Show featuring Greg Cody.
Yeah.
If that's not an incentive to go listen.
That's a fine.
What is?
What it was Dexter was breathy in a similar way, but that also might be because he has the smallest head in the world.
Yeah, he's got trouble inhaling oxygen because of his small head. I'm not making fun of people with small heads, by the way. I don't know if that's a thing, if that's what made people cringe, but...
No, that's not.
For all the small-headed people out there, I'm with you.
That's not what made people cringe.
You're not useless.
In fact, it was longer than a cringe. Whatever it is that we were all feeling, I would say, was longer than a cringe.
Right.
Now we're going to get him mad again. Yeah. We're going to get him mad again. But did the tiny-headed Dimwitty, did he cough while doing that impersonation? Because it sounded like that might have been hard for you to do.
Do you want to hear the clip again, Dan?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
I'm like a dog with a bone on this one.
Please.
Gentlemen, thank you. We're going into this next game off two big wins in a row.
Now,
I know the psychology of sports better than anybody. And I'm going to tell you, we're poised right now, if we're not careful, to go into this game with a big head. But listen, so we don't go into this game with a big head. I brought in a special guest today. It's Dexter Dinwiddie, who you may all know as the Guinness World Record holder for the smallest head. Now, here's Dexter.
Guys, I've gone through life never having to worry about having a big head. And you know what? Even though some people might make fun of me, I think it's the way to go. Because I never have to worry about overconfidence, not taking anything for granted. And you guys are in that position right now, okay? I know you got helmets to hide it, but I want you to trot onto that field imagining that that helmet is rattling around on top of a small head like mine. Okay, guys? I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. I got all the faith in the world for you. Go get him today with small heads. Small heads.
Roy and Jessica, you're mortified. I've never seen either one of you. Something tragic has swept through the studio. I can't believe how you both seem like you're in a great deal of pain.
Yeah, that was painful. Now, obviously, that was clearly your voice. So, besides that, like, I mean, Why? Whose idea was that?
I don't know, like, if I'm confused or if I'm offended in some way.
Let me clear this up. Dexter has actually got a human 6'4"
football
body.
Player. He's a football player.
He just has an extremely tiny head.
It's tiny. It's a tiny head. What that's about the joke.
That? Don't you understand?
Again and again, that's the joke. The joke is that he's got a small head.
You don't want to have a big head going into a big game.
You get complacent.
You're right.
So he shrunk the head, and now and then the voice sounds
thank you for,
very.
Thank you for explaining it.
Well, that, I feel like it's it art. He's very proud of what he did with it.
Right. So. Right. Proud, maybe stretching it.
It's a clip that we just played to promote your show. Right. Like, technically, even though you don't know what the clip is, right. And you were radiant while it was playing both times, right. I might add.
Yeah, the clip was, there were a couple of things that were added out of the clip that I would have had in there when I was introducing Dinwiddie. I said to him, as an aside, you have trouble finding hats or what?
That would have made people flock to
it. And he told me off air that he does have trouble finding hats. Mm. Cause even the ones with the things that the adjustable strap on the back, don't adjust small enough for him. But anyway, you know, Hard Knocks produces that. So a lot of that is,
right. It's on them.
You know, right. I mean, you know, we're totally. Just, I can't tell what they're going to show, what they're not going to show, you know. But you can get a Hard Knocks Lobos update every week on the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
I want just to rewind real quick here before we go to some more Urban Podcast Meyer talk.
Out every
I
Monday
just
morning.
Want to rewind to the art, the pageantry, the grace of Greg Cody right before all those things that just produced him radiant at his own work. Greg Cody yelled at me and called me an asshole and said that he was glad to see me roasted on Saturday. And can't wait to, because he's going to heckle me.
Mm-hmm.
When I gave him the offer of being one of the roasters so he can do that,
right.
And his profound laziness, because he just wants to go there and drink scotch,
mm-hmm.
His profound laziness prevented him from wanting to do that and make the jokes. And because it would have been work. Well, writing jokes would have been work.
I think that's before you called him useless.
No, it was before I called him useless.
Right, I think if you asked him today, he'd gladly get up there and deliver for you.
You think? So it has to come, because I thought a roast was supposed to be honoring someone. You've not explained to me. You did not decide to do this. You're going to go there and you're going to sit in the crowd and you're going to drink.
Right. And have a good time, even though I got to get up super early the next morning and drive to Tampa for the Dolphin-Bucks game. But that's my problem, not yours. It's going to be fun. No, I look forward to not. I don't want to work. I don't want to perform.
Well, he explained it to me. You did. I don't know if you remember. At golf, you were, again, four Bloody Marys in on right. The eighth hole. But you did explain to me that you didn't feel comfortable making fun of a man that you consider to be one of your best friends.
Right.
And Dan Le Batard, it wasn't a comfort zone for you.
The one who just called me useless.
Yes.
So I'm rethinking about that good friend stature.
Where are the chickens? Stugatz couldn't go because he doesn't want to hear bad things said about me. Oh, and Greg Cody didn't want to go. I mean, what are you guys talking about? Like, I invited you both to an honor of mine. I bestowed upon both of you friendship of come on out and enjoy this with me. And neither one of you got back to me.
I think when you have a really good friend, it's easy to make fun of them because you guys know it's all in jest. But when you actually feel like a little tinge of animosity towards someone, you don't want to take it over the line.
Oh, I see. Oh. So if he had gone in there he'd come in enraged by his resentment.
Boy, because psychology over here.
Because we don't promote his show enough.
Well, you do now in lieu of money. So, I'm no longer holding out.
But did we just sell that podcast? Was the sound we just played something that made people go, you know what? I need to go find out about the small heads and where that chant came from. I'm asking.
Yes is the answer. And it's what you just played, I don't know how long it was. It was 30 seconds of a 53-minute podcast. So,
but the best 30 seconds, right?
No, it was a weird 30 seconds. I think we submitted a couple of different things. One of the things I submitted was we talked to Seth Wickersham, the ESPN senior writer, about his new Patriots book, And I also submitted a sound clip of him telling a couple of funny stories about the Patriots.
That would have been good. That would have, I think, been better than Smallheads.
No,
Greg
no,
Cody
no,
with
no,
a
no,
journalistic
no, no,
interview
no, no.
Of a writer who's going to be on with us next week.
You tune in to Greg Cody. You want Smallheads. You want Smallheads. You want a chant of Smallheads. You don't
you.
Want journalism.
Honestly, I subscribed when you oddly got defensive over Dave Shue and called Dan an asshole.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.